for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 632 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's another great crowdfunding doubleheader week here at the podcast, and I talk with Jimmy Broxton from Fully Loaded, which is on Zoop.gg, and then Ed Jowett returns for Grace Under Pressure on Kickstarter. Everything kicks off with Jimmy Broxton, who has a Zoop.gg project underway for his Fully Loaded graphic novel. Here's how that 100-page soft cover book is described. Blade Runner meets Sin City in a neo-noir cyberpunk crime thriller. Art to die for, a story to kill for, and a shattering finale you won't see coming in 100 years. We discuss who Carson Blake is, what's going on around him, and what else is coming from Jimmy in the months ahead. Be sure to back this project before it concludes on Friday, March 22. Then everything wraps up with Ed Jowett's return to the podcast as we talk about what's the latest happenings with SOV Comics, including his present Kickstarter, Grace Under Pressure. This crowdfunding project is described this way. The world as we know it ended a century ago. Civilization crumbled and zombie-like infected roam everywhere. It's a daily struggle for the humans that are still alive. Join Grace, Jessica, and Clint as they try to survive the wildlands of Gaia. As people fight over what little resources exist, they try to grab whatever they can while they still survive. We look into who the characters are, how this works with Shades of Vengeance's other projects, and what else is coming from them in the months ahead. This Kickstarter will conclude on Sunday, March 24 at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, so be sure you back this project once you have finished listening to this great interview. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Would you choose to live forever in a future where everything that's cruel, criminal, and corrupt is the order of the day? Carson Blake certainly didn't. A former Special Forces operative turned gun for hire is lured out of retirement to save the family of a man who once saved his life. And the book is called Fully Loaded, and it's from Jimmy Broxton of 2000 AD, among other good things fame. And how you doing, Jimmy?
I'm doing very well. Pleasure to be here, Wayne. Thank you for having me on board.
It's good to talk with you. And as I said before we started recording, there's congratulations due. You had a goal of $5,000, and in 12 hours, you met that goal. So, wow, good for you.
I know. Isn't that incredible? I was not expecting that. So that was a wonderful thing to wake up to this morning, let me tell you.
Well, that's great because people always get on me because I don't do it soon enough. I want to talk about the book and the characters and the art and all that stuff, but people want to know about the campaign. So it's at Zoop.gg. If you go to Zoop.gg/C as in cat and then /fully loaded, all one word, you'll be able to find the campaign there. And it's going to end in, and I'm never good at math, so I'm not exactly sure, but mid to late March it's going to conclude. But as I was telling you before also, you don't have to sit there refreshing the screen all the time like many crowdfunding people do just to see if anybody's reloaded. In fact, you're $1,000 beyond that while we're talking already. So, man, you're doing great.
Yeah, it's been a phenomenal first 24 hours, way beyond my expectations and other things I've done before. So at this point, I couldn't be happier. I really couldn't.
I got to read this one sentence in the description on Zoop that makes me smile. Yeah. It's 2065. Carson Blake is 100 years old, fully loaded, and tired of asking nicely.
Yeah.
I love that sentence. That's such a great sentence. As somebody who's a little older these days, I can relate to not wanting to ask nicely anymore.
This great stuff. Tell me about it. I'm in the same boat, I think, Wayne. Absolutely.
Now, the book is described as a 100-page deluxe softcover written and illustrated by you, published by Verity Comics in association with Scratch Comics Publications, exclusively available from Zoop. And since you will appeal to fans of American Flag, Sin City, Blade Runner, A Clockwork Orange, Mad Max, and Tarkovsky, I don't know what that is, but then Roger Corman, I know who he is.
Yeah.
So all kinds of good of appeal there. So why don't you talk about how the book came to be or where the idea came from and why you chose to go this route?
Okay, yeah. The basic concept of the book is it's a combination of various sort of ideas and threads of different stories and characters that honestly I've had kicking around for years, you know, many years. I did an illustration, a drawing, gosh, I'm not sure exactly when, at least 30 years ago. That drawing is lost, unfortunately. And it was of a lone sort of gumshoe, private eye looking type fella on a balcony, looking out, looking very forlorn with a futuristic cityscape around him. He's there smoking a cigarette because, you know, we all did back then. That image resonated with me and I'd kind of forgotten about it, but it never went away. And there were a few story ideas that turned into other projects, but in my mind I kept coming back to this one. And, you know, I don't want to get into sort of too much detail, but I had a sort of what would we call it? A health emergency early last year. Mm. I was a bit touch and go for a while, but I came through. And when I came through, I started to get all these ideas and all these threads. They coalesced into something that seemed workable to me. They would literally come to me in dreams. And I would wake up in the morning, you know, scrambling from my notebook, trying to make notes of all the things that had come to me, almost as if it's been beamed in from somewhere else. You know, don't want to get sort of too sort of spiritual or metaphysical, but very, very strange. And I've not experienced that before. So that's how all of this sort of coalesced, as I say. And then there's like this just outpouring of material. I thought, well, I need to get cracking on this. So that's why this, you know, got done so quickly in terms of preparing it for publication.
I love the subtitle, There Goes the Future.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, you can read that in many ways, can you not? Yes. Mm-hmm.
I get a kick. Now, one of the things, of course, that I read a couple of other interviews you had done too, was just a good thing. The art is largely black and white. And I understand you wanted to match the tone of the story you were telling and stuff. But there's some of us who enjoy black and white. So I know some people grouse and say, well, you know, it's only black and white, but where'd all the color go and stuff? But
yeah.
Black and white actually is a very powerful way of storytelling, particularly when you're doing like futuristic or crime stories. So this just fits that wheelhouse perfectly. So I think you made a great choice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I hope so. I mean, I love color work and I'm known for doing a lot of black and white stuff, but I've done color work as well, but color takes it into a different, different dimension, and color just is so subjective and people just, you know, people say, oh, you know, I don't like pink or I don't like yellow. You know, people have very subjective opinions about color. Nobody ever says that about black and white. Nobody says, oh, well, I don't like gray. You know what I mean? So something about black and white that just communicates directly. It's a little bit like reading the written word. So if you know, especially sequential art, if it's in black and white, I think it just beams straight in. And then you can just sort of relate to the story. In ways that color doesn't always seem to achieve, but whether it's an age thing, because I love black and white films, you know, maybe the younger audience, a lot of young people are not so familiar with black and white material, so they feel they need the color in a almost like a set in a sensory overload kind of a thing. But I sometimes don't think we need color. You know, sorry, I'm rambling, but you know.
No. It's the first time I ever really encountered black and white comics, I think, with the Turtles.
Mm.
When they first came out, they were black and white, and holy smoke, did that thing take off. It was hilarious because the people who did it, they just thought they were going to do this one shot and be done with it. And so all of a sudden, Diamond's calling them up and saying, "Where's issue number two?"
Yeah.
And the franchise was born, and to this day, it still goes along.
Yeah, it's recently been revitalized, hasn't it? There's some mm-hmm. awesome stuff coming out with the Turtles. So, yeah, mm-hmm. what a story that is.
Yeah, oh, man. So, as far as I'm just curious about Carson Blake. I'm always interested as where characters came from. Mm. Is he like patterned after somebody you know? Does he have elements of you? Does he come from your imagination? Who is Carson Blake?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think, you know, understandably, and perhaps, you know, goes without saying, there are elements of me. He's a man of a similar age. I'm the model for him, so he looks like me. But he's not a self-insert in the sense that, you know, he's definitely not me. But the story, although it's sort of sci-fi dystopian crime, it does touch on some bigger themes. And in a way, it's about the aging process and how the world changes and how people, you know, move on. But of course, he doesn't age. You know, he is, you know, not immortal, but he's 100 years old, but he's not a 100-year-old man. You know, he's a 40-year-old man or whatever. I actually figured out his exact age. So it's an exploration of how the world changes when you don't, it to a degree, if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. He's not just a cipher, you know, he's not a convenient article to explore that. He is a character in his own right. But there's more to it and him than, you know, a gun-toting action hero. At least I hope so. That's the plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I was reading an interview you did with somebody else, and something really fascinating came that you were talking about. I mean, if you look at the artwork, and if you go to that page on Zoop, you will see this amazing artwork. Particularly, the backgrounds are just astounding.
Oh, thank you.
I have to say, and I read, and I had to ask you about it. Was that some of these backgrounds were ones you had done for like DC? That they had done, they wanted backgrounds for certain things, and you developed those for them. And if we looked closely enough, we might see some of those backgrounds in this book. Is that true?
To a degree, yeah. You won't see any of those backgrounds in this book, because I'd probably get into a lot of trouble for sort of copyright reasons. But for years, I guess through the 90s into the 2000s, I was one of, if not the chief background designer for DC Comics licensing / Warner Brothers. So if, you know, if they needed a skyline or a cityscape of Gotham or Metropolis, I'd be the guy they called. I did a lot of work for that over the years. And that, it's of course completely anonymous, but it gets used on everything, you know. Packaging for toys, apparel, T-shirts, cereal boxes, you name it. And they still use it to this day. So I don't even know how I got into that. It's not, I don't have a background in architectural design or anything like that, but I had a call one day. One of the editors said, licensing, we're looking for somebody to do backgrounds. Maybe, you know, some of the comic art I churned in featured backgrounds that were perhaps a little bit more complete than you sometimes see, that caught somebody's eye. So that's how all that started. So I've been doing that for years, you know, the cityscapes and skylines and things. And I love architecture. I'm fascinated by it, and I try and incorporate it into my work. And it does play a role in this, in Fully Loaded, you know, because we're building worlds here, so the world has to look convincing. And I like drawing buildings, you know, so it's nice to have them in there.
But that's great, because there's a lot of artists who don't particularly like to do that.
I know, that's true. I mean, I know so many comic artists, truly great ones as well, and they're not fans of doing that kind of stuff. And the other thing which I really love doing is drawing cars, automotive stuff. And I know so many great artists, award-winning fan favorite artists, and I say, oh no, I hate drawing cars. I was talking to a friend of mine. I won't mention his name because it'll make him. I don't want him to sort of admit that he doesn't like doing these things. But he said, "Oh, I hate doing cars." I said, "Oh, I love it. You know, but I'm into cars. You know, I guess we draw what we're into. But you know, I love cars. You know, it's one of my things. So I love to like the car that Carson Blake drives in the story." It's a car that I own, you know, it's one that I have. So, although it's an old car, but I guess it could stick around till then, you know, hopefully.
Well, you remind me, I've been watching, like, if I watch an animated show or something like that, oftentimes all the rest of the thing will all be hand-drawn or apparently hand-drawn. But then the car shows up and it's obviously CGI.
Sure. Yeah,
and it moves. It moves differently than everything else, and it just doesn't look like it fits in the animated universe that they've set up. So, and by the way, you use the word complete to describe your art. That is a that's being very nice about it. I mean, it is astounding the detail you put in there. I mean, wow. I can see why some people might not want to do that, but boy, you really throw everything in and the kitchen sink in there to get this stuff. It's amazing the art that you do. There's this one picture where this guy is falling onto a top of a taxi cab.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I can't count the pieces of glass and metal shards and stuff like that moving. It's astounding, the detail on that, because that's just wow. I mean, you got to love it in order to do the detail that you do. And you must obviously love that, because it is just amazing good stuff.
Oh, gosh, thank you. You're very kind. I mean, you can get carried away sometimes. And broken glasses, it's like a standing joke. And I talk to sort of friends of mine where I don't think I've ever done a comics project where one of the pages didn't feature broken glass. Seriously, I mean, in the maybe thousands of pages I've done over the years, there's always broken glass somewhere. And you think I'd sort of run to the hills and avoid it. But, you know, now I'm doing my own thing where I'm in complete control and I'm doing even more broken glass. Where does that come from? But, of course, fortunately, a lot of that's a lot of the art is drawn directly in ink. There's no pencils as such. I have a vague idea. So at least I'm not, you know, inking things. I'm not doing it twice, you know. But yeah, that scene or that image with the guy falling onto the taxi and the destroying it, basically, he's been thrown off a tower block. There may have to be a background for that. So watch this space. At the moment, it's just him and the car. But you know, I'm not sure if I can do that as a dropout without a background. I don't know.
Because I know what you're going to have to do to make it a dropout is you're going to have to circle or put a thing around every individual piece of glass. And that's going to take time. I don't know if I have the patience for that. That's just. But the question I have to do is how do you decide to draw broken glass? Do you shatter something? Or is it your imagination the way that you see it? How do you make that happen?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because it's not as it is random, but like everything, you know, there's sort of there's physics and perspective to everything. Even you know, flying shards of broken glass. So obviously, I look at reference, you know, because my work is largely representational. You know, it's not massively photographic or photorealistic, but it looks kind of convincing. It's not as stylized or cartoony as or at least not for this book, as some artists' work. So yeah, I mean, I do look at a lot of research and reference material to get. It's all about authenticity, really. If it's meant to be, you know, a taxi that's been destroyed because somebody's been thrown off a building and landed on it, it needs to look like one, you know. Mm-hmm. Always trying to create convincing, not necessarily photographic or photorealistic art, but convincing, you know, so you feel it, you know, so there's a resonance to the artwork. That's what I'm, and an atmosphere, you know, in the panels. That's what I'm also, you know, weather plays a part as well. You know, in this story, it's always bloody raining, you know. It's that cliche of like film noir where it's always raining. And I explore that a little bit, hopefully in a humorous way. So it's creating that sense of place, I guess, you know, is important to me.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about the story, and so let me quote a little bit more. It's on Zoop.gg. It says, Carson Blake must face his own demons as well as those around him as he's drawn into a brutal web of deceit and betrayal where the worst excesses of human greed and desire extend from the darkest alleys to the glittering palaces of the authoritarian elite. It doesn't sound too far off from some places in today, so did you draw inspiration from stuff going on today, or did you, is this sort of a parable of what might be? Where did that part of the story come from?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I had to quickly disappear then. I hope you weren't wondering where I got to. Yes, I mean, it's the near future, and, you know, I think most of us, you know, just irrespective of which side we're on politically or whatever, think that, you know, that we live in quite troubled times, shall we say. I would say almost dystopian. So the world where this story takes place takes that to, I wouldn't say a logical conclusion, but a conclusion, you know. So, yes, there is a direct, there is a parallel there. Between what I see going on now, and I'm sort of taking that, exaggerating it, obviously, for, you know, for entertainment and comedic and dramatic effect. But don't want to say too much, you know, but it's rarely for me. I'm struggling to find words to put this succinctly, but it's the world is not a million miles away from where I think we are right now, but just turned up to 11, maybe.
Because sometimes I feel bad because when I'm talking to particularly artists on an audio podcast, like you would likely hold up a picture or say, "Well, this illustration," really. But unfortunately, when it's just audio, I can't do that. So I'm stuck with words and things like that. So I do my best to make it relatable and something you can describe. So, which brings me to the title, Fully Loaded. Mm. Why is it called Fully Loaded? I'm kind of interested in that phrase.
Yeah, the title for the piece didn't come straight away, that's for sure. And I was exploring lots of different things. And I kind of wanted not a sort of generic throwaway title that we always used to have. It had to be relevant to the story. But, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, where, you know, every film was called something like, you know, Die Hard or Basic Instinct or Fatal Attraction, where they just take two cool words and stick them together, and they had absolutely nothing to do with the story, really. But it was a marketing tag, if nothing else. And I quite like that in a way. So Fully Loaded, to a degree, is one of those combinations of words. And I was astounded to find out that nobody had used it before. Seriously, I mean, there's no film, there's no comic. I couldn't, you know, did extensive searches. You know, somebody's going to come back to me and say, "Yeah, well, there is one." You know, but I couldn't find one. So that the title was available, so I went with it because I thought it was catchy and it's obviously a well-worn phrase, but it does have a relevance to the story. Because Carson Blake is fully loaded in a way that other people in the story aren't. It doesn't refer to his weaponry or his ammunition. It's to do with his genetic makeup.
Okay, so that's interesting.
If I can say that, because I haven't said anything yet, or in interviews or in the blurb for the project, but there is a dimension to the story which is biological with regard to how humans are in this near future. They're afflicted in ways, and he's not, which is another reason why he's 100 years old.
Wow.
So he is fully loaded in the sense that he's got a full genetic makeup and nobody else has.
Interesting. Are we going to explore that in the book?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first book, There Goes the Future, it comes to light, obviously, and it's touched upon and it's relevant, but it doesn't get thoroughly explored. What I'm hoping to do in the second book, tentatively titled Old World Order, we almost have a year one, you know, an origin story where we go back and find out exactly how it is that Carson Blake is still alive, you know, 100 years later or whatever. And that's that. And it also ties into the events of this book.
Okay, because yeah, I thought you'd call it Even More Fully Loaded or something.
Even More
like
Fully
that.
Loaded, yeah. I like that.
Like a Fully Loaded colon, even more so, even more. Kind of stuff, because it's really great. Now, the covers are interesting to me because there's two covers that I see. There's like a magenta cover and a cyan cover.
Yeah.
You can choose between those two. Is that how this works?
Yeah. I mean, I was working on various cover images as we were preparing all the artwork for launch. And there was even sort of full color, sort of fully rendered, almost fully painted images. And then I thought, I'm not a fan of fully colored images and covers if the book's black and white. Does that make you almost feel like you're being sort of sold a lemon or something? It's like, well, you know. But a black and white cover is not always that eye-catching in and of itself. So I wanted to have a spot color, basically. And I thought, well, let's just go pure printing colors, cyan and magenta. And I'll do a cyan version and a magenta version. Originally, it was going to be the same black and white artwork, but just two different color variations. And I thought, well, no, that seems bit mean, you know. Let's do two different illustrations altogether. So the cover art is completely different, and one's cyan and one's magenta. And it's interesting the way that the campaign is breaking down. I thought most people would go for the cyan, the blue one, but most people are going for the magenta one, which is surprising to me.
I was going to say I like the magenta one because you've got the solitary guy walking kind of away from us, but towards, I guess, towards the story in essence, with all the crazy buildings and stuff all around him.
Yeah, indeed. It's a visual metaphor for, it sets the scene, you know, in an obvious way, but it's a visual metaphor for what takes place. As you say, he's walking because the character is in retirement and he's brought back into this world, this underworld, if you like, of sort of crime and corruption and God knows what. So he's forced back in. So he's walking back into a world that he'd left behind. So that's why we have that, of him sort of walking away from us into that as if he's being lost somehow. But there are other elements and clues in that cover, almost like little visual Easter eggs, which hint at the ending of the book. I'm not going to say anything, but, you know, once you've read the ending, when you get to, like, you know, the last page, page 99, 100 or whatever, the cover then makes even more sense, if that makes sense.
So was that the first one or did you do the other one first?
No, I did the other one first. The one that I thought would be more commercial and more comic booky. A bit like sort of movie posters, you know. I wanted to do one of those classic Drew Struzan, Bob Peak type sort of movie poster sort of compositions. And I've always wanted to do one of those. I thought, well, this is an ideal opportunity to do something like that. And then I thought, no, you know what? I think I want something that resonates a little bit more. And it seems that that's the one that people, so far, the backers are going for that one.
Mm-hmm. I particularly like the way you do the sound effects. Sometimes, like, there's a blam, and in the sound effect is the gun that's doing the shooting, which I like.
Yeah, I mean, that's
great.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I consider myself a graphic designer in service of narrative. I mean, I am an illustrator to a degree, but so much of comics is graphic design, and you know, the lettering, the sound effects, all of that is part of the art to me. It's not separate. So when you can incorporate it like that, I think, you know, some magic can happen. I mean, not necessarily what I'm doing, but, you know, people who've influenced me, you know, like Steranko and Chaykin, and Marshall Rogers, you know, Eisner did wonderful things with sound effects, you know, incorporating it into the art in creative ways. And I do like to do that. If it's and Frank Miller, of course, has done that sort of stuff brilliantly. So, I like to do that. Mm-hmm. But I also like silent panels, you know, where it's just the drawing, you know.
I get a kick because it's the worst excesses of human greed and desire extend from darkest alleys to the glittering palaces. So. I'm just sort of curious as to how different or similar society is as far as like structure goes. Are there criminal organizations? Are they more in the light, quote unquote? Are they more established in the future? I don't want to spoil stuff, but on the other hand, I'm fascinated to see how that goes.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Yeah. Again, that's a good question. As I was working it all out, originally it was the world was going to be much more divided and much more feudal, where you had a real, you know, them and us, you know, a massive divide between, you know, the authoritarian elite and everybody else, the peasants, basically. And that proved to be limiting to what the story that I wanted to tell, because the sort of the non-elite society needed to function properly as well. So I sort of reined that in a little bit. And it's not a million miles away from where we are now with, you know, let's be honest, the ordinary people and the very wealthy at the top sort of calling the shots. But it just takes it to another level where there are actual physical barriers and divides between where, you know, they live and the rest of us live. Mm-hmm. So, and again, that's relevant to the story. And Carson Blake is involved in sort of bridging some of those divides, shall we say. But society does function, you know, so the sort of the ordinary world, the non-elite world, functions the way society does now, but just not as well.
Yeah. Okay, I'd be curious to see how that all works out because
me too.
I got to talk about some of the levels and add-ons and stuff that you have. One of my very favorite things, and it's probably not going to be in this book, but you're probably going to be drawn into the future. You'd be drawn into Fully Loaded. Your likeness will be immortalized and drawn into Fully Loaded by Jimmy as a background character. Nobody's claimed that yet.
No.
Just sad to say. As we're talking, of course, by the time this post, hopefully some people have. You've got five slots for that. Yeah. I did that once. It was a book. It was about a zombie Moby Dick. You could the amount was something I could afford at that time, and so I put in for it. And then when the book came out, I couldn't find myself. I said, "Where am I?" And I asked the guy who did it. And of course, I wear glasses, and I keep looking for the glasses. But I was a member of the ship, and the ship is full of zombies trying to get Moby Dick. And I was in there, but he had taken the glasses off because the zombies wouldn't wear glasses. And so he said, "You're in the bottom left." And I looked up. Oh, there I am. Sure enough, I'm in there, which was a lot of fun for me. I have to say, when I can afford that, I'm going to do that again because it was such a great thing for me.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
So, I mean, I see people do that all the time. I'm surprised nobody's gone into that yet.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess it's early days, but I mean, hopefully, we added that at the last minute on a previous crowdfunder I did, a book I did called Gold Tiger. We offered that and somebody, wanted to be in. Only one person did it, so I made quite a big deal of him. You know, he was in across quite. He was almost a character in the story, and he was in quite a few panels. So depending on how many or if any people sort of take that up, they could feature more prominently than third random from the left. You know, I will make an effort to make sure it's obviously them. You know, so. I'm kind of looking forward to that if somebody does go for it.
I hope so, because it's a lot of fun. I have to say, when mine was in there, like I said, I can always tell that story now when I'm talking with people. So I really enjoy that. Now, you've also got limited edition signed art prints. a girl with a drill.
Yes.
Nobody's claimed that one yet, too. I'm surprised. Now, the original ink drawing, you've got three, as we're talking, because we're doing this early, fully inked original art drawing from Jimmy on A4 art board.
Yeah.
Fully loaded characters only.
Yeah, no requests. Unfortunately.
No requests. Okay. Because you got 3 out of 10 are taken there. Now, there's the fully loaded and fully rendered, original A3 fully rendered full color mixed media pinup by Jimmy. And that's a little more expensive, I do have to say.
Hopefully. Yeah, that is very expensive. I mean, it's like $1,000.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's a huge amount of work for me to do that. And we offered it just because I thought it would be a nice thing to offer. I'm honestly not expecting anybody to go for that. I mean, it's a lot cheaper than an Adam Hughes. He'll charge you $16,000. But then again, I'm no Adam Hughes, you know?
Another thing, too, I noticed, too, there's the fully loaded signed book and print bundle, which one person has claimed so far out of 25. So it gives you the magenta version cover and a book plate.
Yeah.
With the lady with the drill previously mentioned. She's in there, too. So one person has claimed that. I expect there's going to be more of that as time goes along.
Yeah, I hope so. And the one that seems to be going well is the remarked book plate. So it's a sort of a signed book plate, but it has an original drawing on the book plate, which gets put into the book. That last time I looked, we got up to about 10 of those. So people, seem to be going for that one. I guess it's interesting because I'm not an artist. I don't sell my originals at all. Not because I'm precious about them or anything. It's just not something I do. An original drawing by me is fairly rare. I'm not saying valuable, but it's certainly rare because I don't make them available. So it's nice that some people are going for those.
Because right now it's 12 out of 20. I've taken that one.
Oh, really? Okay, well, that'll probably all go then. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's a great one for that.
That's more than last time I looked.
Yeah, it's going up. It's every time it's going to go up. You get the fully loaded book and digital bundle. You can get obviously a digital copy as well as a paper copy. And you get both covers.
Yeah, if somebody wants both covers or one for a gift, yeah. So
that's great. Well, collectors, of course, want them both for themselves. I don't know how many give them out as gifts, but if they do, you'll certainly accommodate that too. So that's a good thing. So, yeah, all these good drawings and stuff like that. There's all kinds of good things to get into it.
Oh, thank you.
And I do want to talk about there's a description at the top of the page. It's Blade Runner meets Sin City in a neo-noir cyberpunk crime thriller. Art to die for, a story to kill for, and a shattering finale you wouldn't see coming in 100 years. Ha ha ha. So he's 100 years old. I get that one. That's a good joke. So it's really good. And what I see of it looks really great. And I'm really fascinated to see the story and how it comes together. And what goes on in it? Because there's one of the great things about your art is my brain fills in the space between the panels.
Cool.
There's one page where he's walking and he's coming closer and closer to us. And when he gets really close, I'm kind of like, I want to back away. Oh, he's getting too close. He's getting too close. Well, I love that. That's the thing about how great and dynamic everything is. Really, really, really works. I want to see how this guy falls on the taxi too. That's
That's a pivotal scene. I mean, the guy who ends up on the taxi is not a pivotal character. He's that has to happen. Just put it that way.
Okay. Very good. And there's another panel. Full, looks like it's a double page spread. It says, "Life ain't a cabaret, old chum."
Yeah.
Which shows obviously a place where it looks like the well-to-do go for things.
To a degree. It's is it a strip club? I'm not sure. I'm currently, not right this second. I'm talking to you, my friend. But the page I have going on right now is the immediate sort of spread prior to that, where he arrives at that particular club, if you want to call it that. But it's outside, you know, so and again, there's a little divide between the street and what goes on inside. But yeah, it's kind of full of gangsters and, you know, ne'er-do-wells and so on. But it's sort of a high-end joint. But yeah, it's it is what it is.
or a low-end joint, depending on what you go there for.
Yeah.
Now, the one more thing I want to ask about it. It says that Fully Loaded is your first full-length creator-owned graphic novel. Mm-hmm. Now, you've done lots of storytelling and stuff before. How was it to do a full-length graphic novel? How different did you have to approach it? What did you do differently?
Yeah. Obviously, everything – I mean, I've written things before, but they've been short pieces, you know, sort of – so this is something else altogether. So, of course, because I'm collaborating with writers, I'm following their script. So on this one, I'm doing everything. So it's to a degree, it's liberating because I can do what I want. But at the same time, I have to sort of be strict with myself and I can't ramble and indulge myself. Oh, you know, I really like tanks. I'll draw a tank on this page, you know, or whatever. So I have to be focused and not get too carried away. But the beauty of it is, obviously, I don't have to produce a full script. I have a plot. It's all worked out, beginning, middle, end. And then I write scenes with basic action and elements. And then I have notes for dialogue, but I don't write the dialogue finally until I'm lecturing. Because, you know, when you get the art, it's a little bit like the Stan Lee Marvel method, but it's all, you know, but without the collaboration. So when I've done the art and the page is finished and I'm looking at it and then I go to the lecturing stage, I can decide, well, you know what, I don't, that little bit of dialogue is now redundant or I need to change this or that. So the whole thing's very fluid and very, very creative. For me, at least. So I love that aspect of it. And that's really different to what I normally do when I'm working from, you know, real writer's scripts as opposed to mine, you know?
I often ask people who do both, like story, do both writing and artist. Are you an artist who writes, or are you a writer that draws, or are you a storyteller? And I have a feeling, based on our conversation, you consider yourself a storyteller.
Yes, I would. Yeah, if I could be so bold. Yeah, I would. I would not make a claim that I'm a writer, although I have written things, you know, professionally over the years, various areas. But and obviously I produce art. But yeah, storyteller is that's lovely. Thank you. That's certainly where I'd like to see myself, definitely.
That's great stuff. So, of course, this is obviously keeping you busy. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
At the moment, I'm 100% on Fully Loaded, to be honest. I have a few covers and a few little bits and pieces, which will see the light of day, hopefully quite soon. And I am in talks with, I can't say too much, unfortunately, a publisher I've worked with before to do a series, a character I've worked on before, which hopefully will happen. But the timing and scheduling of that will depend on what happens with Fully Loaded. Because if this goes well, and it looks to be going quite well, if this does as well as I hope, then I'm going to focus on this for the foreseeable future, I think.
Oh, wow.
Well, at least my own projects, because I've got two or three other concepts that I've been working on for years as well, you know, but only in a sort of preliminary sense that I'd like to explore.
Well, based on how this one's going, I think you should be developing those.
Thank you.
Because, wow, that's, I mean, like I said, 12 hours, met your goal. You know, $5,000 is a good goal to get. I mean, there's
it's amazing. It's way better than any other crowdfunder I've been involved with. You know, certainly ones that I've done purely on my own. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's very exciting.
It's great. Oh, we've got great things coming. Again, it's fully loaded. And if you go to zoop.gg, it's at zoop.gg/seasoncap/fully loaded. And that's all one word. And are you on social media by any chance, Jimmy?
I don't do a huge amount on social media, but I am on Facebook. So I'm just Jimmy Broxton on Facebook. And I do have a Twitter page as well. Again, just I can't remember my Twitter one. It's not just Jimmy Broxton. I think there's some numbers behind. I think I'm the real Brox. The real Brox on Twitter. Yeah, that's or X.
That's good.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. I say it's the app formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah. I like that.
That's the way to do it because it's X now. Why I did that, I'll never figure out. But
no, I mean, I know Elon's is a wacky guy, but I couldn't get my head around that one.
No, me either. Because now we don't tweet anymore, we X.
We X, yeah, it's crazy.
I don't get it. But anyway, Jimmy, it's great talking with you, and I'd wish you success, but you're already there, so more success.
Thank you so much.
Fully loading your other stuff, because it looks like a great book. I just can't wait to see it. It looks so excellent. I love crime stories, and I love science fiction, and this blends all that good stuff together so nicely. It's going to be a great story. So all I can say is keep it up, and even more success as you get forward to, because, boy, I can't wait to see it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/major spoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/major spoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. Explore a world where a cataclysm happened 100 years ago, and now people fight with each other and zombies over what little is left. It's Grace Under Pressure, a post-apocalyptic comic of survival. And I'm talking today with a favorite of ours around here, Ed Jowett from Shades of Vengeance Comics. How's it going, Ed?
It's going really well, and thank you so much for having me back. It's been a really long time, hasn't it?
It's been a while, yeah. That happens.
But
that's okay.
Yeah, no, it's so good to be back. And you know what? You might be one of my most often quoted people regarding my comics. Because some of the things you've said just while we were chatting on this podcast, they really stick with me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a comic where I play to those strengths that you've identified in what we write in a big way. I'm looking forward to talking about it in detail.
Okay. All right. Now, of course, this is a Kickstarter going on. We got to make sure we get that in there.
Oh, yeah.
And people always get mad at me because I don't say this soon enough. This project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Sunday, March 24 at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So we got to make sure people know that. If you go to the website, it's Era Survival Grace Under Pressure. And can you explain a little bit about how this ties into, there's a video game or a role-playing game.
It's a role-playing game. Exactly.
Yeah. How's this work?
Yeah. So imagine a universe, any universe that's been created by a person as a 4-story mansion with hundreds of rooms in, right? Mm-hmm. Now, a tabletop role-playing game is the key to the front door. It lets you in. You can explore any room you like in the house. But the reality is you're going to look around on the ground floor. You'll go upstairs to the first floor and look around a bit up there, I guess. Maybe even to the floor above that. But eventually you'll find some rooms that you're pretty comfortable with, and you'll probably stick around in those rooms for the most part. That's definitely the way most people play role-playing games in the way that I've seen. They'll find a place where they're comfortable with, they're happy with, they like the stories they're telling, and they'll leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a comic lets you look in through a window on the third floor, far down in the east wing, that you would otherwise never have reached. And I guess to expand it, as you know, we do audio. The audio dramas would I guess, be sticking your head up against the wall and listening to the arguments going on inside. But that's how this ties in. It's based in the same universe. It's a story that you absolutely could tell as a role-playing game. It has not been told as a role-playing game. This is a unique story that I wrote. Many moons ago, you spoke with my very good friend and co-writer, Jonathan Lewis. He, in fact, was the first of our group to appear on your podcast. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, hey, I've got this idea for a comic. I tried to sell it to someone else and it didn't quite work. But these are roughly what the characters look like and blah, 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 blah. And he had some things that didn't feel quite right for my universe. And overall, the project sort of fizzled out. It never went anywhere for him. So what I did is I said, okay, look, these elements don't quite fit for my universe, but the general attitude of these characters, yeah, that fits. We can do that. So what I did is I picked up Grace, Jessica, Clint, and we went ahead and based them in the Era Survival universe in a way that works a little better for that universe. His whole thing was they were on motorbikes, and that's just not likely to happen in the Era Survival universe. So I took the personalities of those characters and I transferred them over to work in this universe. And it was a tremendously rewarding thing that I was alluding earlier to something that you said a long time ago now, that you always like the way that we write female characters.
Yep.
And Grace and Jessica are two very, very strong, independent female characters. And what you said goes through my head a lot when I sit down and write a comic like this. You know, I'm writing characters who are believable and realistic. You know, they've survived in this world for 30 years or so, however old they are, 20, 30 years. They've survived in this world that's a zombie apocalypse. You know, the apocalypse was 100 years ago. It's not a brand new change. They grew up like this. And Grace is this expert survivalist who's a tracker and a fighter and tough as nails. And Jessica is this slave who was freed by Grace and is now sort of going around with her. Sure, but she's a big believer in people having freedom for obvious reasons, having been a slave and having seen what freedom's then like. She's a fighter as well. She's not gonna let her friends come to harm. Clint is a medic. He's actually a non-combatant. He barely fights. But he's a medic. He believes in healing people and traveling around this post-apocalypse and keeping people alive. That's his job. That's what he does. And the three of these characters roaming this world and looking at the... What are you going to do if you're a person in the post-apocalypse? You're... Civilization has more or less fallen apart, as we would call it. But there are still groups of people. There's still food production. You still have currency to pay. You have to earn that currency somehow. But doing a desk job is not an option. So
right.
This is a story about what it could look like to live in the zombie apocalypse. That's really what this is all about. It's about exploring this world in a way that... Obviously, if you're running a tabletop role-playing game, you're doing the exciting stuff, right? And I'm not saying this comic is not the exciting stuff, but it's more the things you have to do day to day to survive. Than the grand adventure that's going to change the world.
Right, right. Well, you know, that's an important part of the whole story too, you know, being able to make it.
Yeah, so. Definitely. And I think quite a lot of the time people forget that that's part of the story, right? That's we talked once about, you know, a superhero who gets up in the morning and goes out and every day the same junction when he goes to his day job, you know, every day the same junction someone needs saving because it's a really dangerous junction and it's part of their life. And this is not a mundane story. This is how unmundane the mundane is when you're in the zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. Because if you want to check it out, if you go to the Kickstarter page, you've got several sample pages.
Oh, yeah.
There,
yeah,
so people can look.
Letting people know what it is they're buying. You know, I'm not trying to hide anything from anyone about how this comic's going to look and feel. I'm pleased to say that I was able to insert my usual sense of humor. You know, there's some very serious heavy stuff in here. And if you just do the heavy stuff all the time and you never have any let up, you get desensitized to it. It's not a good story anymore. It's not a gripping story. And I think humor is something that cleanses the palate really well. And I like to use a bit of humor. There's one of those pages there. There's the classic metal detector knife gag, right?
Right.
Because Grace just carries that many knives. Now, you can look at that and go, ha, that's funny. That's funny. Or you could look at that and go, why does she carry that many knives? She clearly thinks she needs them. You wouldn't carry knives. You would have sold knives for food at some point if you didn't think you needed them. So it's interesting. It's interesting.
There's a great response. They say, you carry enough knives, do you? And she responds, is there such a thing as too many? Which I find, that's a great bit. That's her actually being serious, but kind of funny at the same time.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, being English, I love that wry humor that you can bring into it. You know, they act like real people. There's a scene between some of those. Obviously, these are sample little bits from the comic. There's a scene between the end of that page and the beginning of the next page where they talk about Clint's love life. And you know, oh, yeah, how serious are you about that girl that you were talking about? And it's like, oh, don't be serious. Clint can't settle down with anyone. It's impossible. He's a traveling medic. How could he settle down? It's not allowed. And, you know, again, it's that slightly playful ribbing that you get when you spend a lot of time around someone. You do it, right? Most human beings do that.
Right.
But for him, you know, it's a recognition of just how his life is never going to be normal.
Or it's a new normal.
Yeah. I mean, normal as we would call it, I suppose.
Now, I've got to ask you something, because many zombie stories, the leading person is a male. Like, for example, Walking Dead, you've got the sheriff guy. And it feels like you flip the script on these ones. You've got the females are the lead, the strong ones. And the supportive person is a guy, which is, you know, not, you don't see that. Like, I always go back to Star Trek and think about how a lot of the doctors for many of the incarnations were female.
Yeah.
And so here we've got the script flips, and I enjoy that because, as I often say about female characters, I do not have any idea what's going to happen next with them. Guys I've read for decades, and I understand, and I have a very good idea what's going to happen, although this guy I don't think I know nearly as well. But to see them and to not know what's going to happen next is something I really enjoy in your comics. So I always look forward to that. And I think that by doing what you've done and flipping the way that we normally expect these kind of stories to go, I think that of course, makes me all the more interested to see what you're going to do.
So I My mother is a doctor, as it happens. And, you know, I think a lot about what it would be like. You know, obviously I've written a post-apocalyptic game. I think a lot about the post-apocalypse, okay? So bear in mind, everyone, yes, I think a lot about the post-apocalypse, more than your average person. And I think to myself, okay, well, in the post-apocalypse, a doctor would still probably feel quite bound by the Hippocratic Oath, right?
Right.
I'm sure they'd fight to defeat zombies and defend themselves, but, you know, they wouldn't want to be harming people. And I've often thought that the challenging people in an apocalypse, the challenging thing in a post-apocalypse, a zombie apocalypse, it's not the zombies. And I always felt The Walking Dead actually did this quite well. It's not the zombies, it's the people. It's the people when you take off the shackles of civilization.
Yep.
They're scary. People are scary. And Grace is, she's not a flipped version of a male character. She's just a person who has survived. And she could just as easily be a male character. But as you say, you just don't see that very often. Right?
Right.
I think it's because probably the majority of fans of comics, which are, you know, zombie comics, are men. And right. They want people to project onto the main character.
Yep.
And that means that they, you know, they automatically choose a man because men can project onto men more easily. Right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But my stories are not about someone projecting. I mean, why you would want to project into a zombie apocalypse is beyond me. Again, I'm someone who thinks about it quite a lot, but I wouldn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, so often in, I blame sort of pulpy comics for this, really. So often in this kind of scenario, the women are the very much the window dressing.
Yeah, oh, the damsel in distress.
At best, they're the damsel in distress. They can be a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I played the Walking Dead Michonne game Telltale did.
Mm-hmm.
I rather enjoyed that. I rather enjoyed everything that Telltale did with The Walking Dead. And obviously Clem is a huge part of that. And I just don't see a reason why it needs to be a man that you are projecting that you are projecting as the main character. I think that Grace is a very capable human being. She is clearly the one that protects the others. She again, right before that page, that same page break I was talking about, she realizes there's a deer there and she makes it her that it targets. In the same way in the very first sample page there, she makes herself the target.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a heroic thing to do however you slice it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got Jessica, and Jessica is not a frontline combatant in the same way, but she's there and ready, and that shotgun is used to great effect on multiple occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about being able to survive in this world, and I want to be convinced that any character that's out there can survive. And to me, Clint has survived not because of his combat skills, but because he associates with people, and I'm sure there were groups before Grace and Jessica, he associates with people who will protect him because he is a medic and has inherent value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I just find interesting, to explore the world through the eyes of these three who, and even the leader of the Raiders is a woman. She's, I guess what I'm saying is you don't have to lose something to be a hero. A lot of the women end up being a lot less feminine in any sense of the word when they are they're made less feminine so that they can be acceptable. And I just don't think you need to write it that way. I don't think it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story that I want to see. And that brings us all the way back around to the thing that I always say to you about why I write comics. I write the stories I want to see. And the story I want to see is these two strong women protecting this man who is clever and smart and good with his hands. He's electrically inclined as well as medically inclined. And you can see the strength and power of these characters while they wander around and try and do the things that they need to do to survive. And Clint is very much inspired by the EMH from Star Trek Voyager. And you were talking about Star Trek, and there is where Star Trek flipped the script, right? I mean, they made the Doctor a man and the Captain a woman, I guess.
Yes.
And I, he is inspired by the EMH and that blind devotion to, I am not really a human being, I'm someone who's going to heal people.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's only when he's not doing the work that the human being comes out. And that's a fun character to explore as well, you know? It's fun and different, and Grace is again in the last page of the sample there, you know, Jessica pretty much has to hold her back and sort of like, no, I'm not okay with this. I'm angry. She's very fiery. And one of the raiders, you know, they're pretty unpleasant people. One of the raiders comments about that. And, you know, Ion, the raider leader, makes it clear how it is that she stayed in charge, which is just with a bit of a sense of humor as well. You know, it's Jeff, I swear, I will let her stab you. And it's just this world where, yeah, you might naturally assume that women could become beaten down or the prey for more predatory males. But there are a lot of badass women out there. You know, my wife is one of them. My wife is a seriously badass woman. And there are a lot of them out there who would not just become that window dressing or that damsel in distress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask a question or two if I can.
Yeah, of course.
The three main characters, are they part of a group or are they their own group?
They are wanderers on their own. So the three of them wander alone. The last page there, that's some raiders who find them as a result of them blowing the deer's head off. And in fact, they are on a mission to defeat and destroy that group of raiders. But obviously, since the raiders sort of happened upon them unexpected, you know, they were trying to track the raiders and find their base and ambush them. And then the raiders find them because they end up fighting. That's they know we're here now. That's what that means.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit more context in the process of the story, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They are tasked with defeating this raider group and breaking them up. And if they do that, it doesn't matter how many of them they kill. As long as the raider group does not exist anymore, they will get paid.
Okay. Now,
you might argue that Ion is the first person that they want to kill.
I've got to ask because I keep imposing Walking Dead sensibilities on this. Where do the zombies come from? Are they people who die? They become zombies? Is that what happens?
Actually, it varies. In the first pages, there, yes, those are dead individuals who are reanimated by the airborne parasite. They just call it infection. And they're airborne parasites, and they are reanimated by them. The deer, however, is what's known as a mutant. So that was a living deer, a warm-blooded deer that was alive that then got infected. And infected mutants, as they're called, shamblers are the first kind. Mutants are fast, dangerous, and clever. They also mutate. So this particular deer has bone armor that you can see around its body. That means that it's much harder to hurt. But obviously Jessica blows its head off, or open at least, which is how they defeat it, because the bone armor doesn't extend to there in this particular case.
And those are the two main kinds of zombies?
Yeah, there are human mutants, for example, or there are dog mutants or whatever. There are also human shamblers, dog shamblers, deer shamblers. Anything warm-blooded can become an infected. I once had a really interesting discussion with a marine biologist, because it turns out that tuna are warm-blooded. I was talking about how, you know, there's this civilization of people out on the water because, you know, whales and dolphins, fine, but more or less you're a lot safer. And he was like, well, by some definitions, tuna are warm-blooded. I was like, okay, cool. So I integrated tuna into that particular role-playing game session just to teach them a lesson for speaking up.
So you talked about the fact that people are still producing food and stuff like that. Does the infection only affects warm-blooded creatures?
Correct.
So it wouldn't bother the food then?
So you can't have livestock farming,
okay?
Obviously. But there are lizards. There are large lizards, crocodile or bigger. People eat those. They eat fish. They eat insects. There are a number of different ways, and then obviously there's vegetable produce as well that they can go with.
So they're largely vegetarians.
I mean, as I say, fish, lizards, definitely a big part of their staple diet. You can even eat insects and fish and so on. They've got choices still. But livestock farming not so much.
Okay. Okay, so that's interesting. Do they have any idea how this happened? Or is that something they'll discover?
They more or less don't. Honestly, they don't care. The struggles for survival, it's not going well. People are dying. In 100 more years, people won't exist anymore.
That's an odd situation to be in.
Yeah.
Really, really different. Oh, that's something different. Of course, you know, they never addressed that in Walking Dead to my satisfaction.
No.
What was going on with that?
Also, Walking Dead was so soon after that there's canned goods around. You know, you can go salvage from places. This is 100 years later. That doesn't exist anymore.
So are there people assigned? Is somebody like managing all this so that there are people who are creating the food, and they probably have protectors, and there's other people doing different things? And is that how that's going?
It's a very complicated world. There are 13 different factions within this world, and the White Cross, Clint is part of the White Cross. They literally make injection, which is the thing you take to avoid becoming infected. You have to take it probably every day because you might inhale a few parasites. If you get bitten, you can take a large dose of it and still not become an infected, as long as you do it quickly. They make it for free and distribute it to as much of humanity as they can in the hope that humanity will eventually, I guess, evolve past it. There are other factions as well. There are ones that believe that you should be infected, that it's the next stage in human evolution. There are some that believe that everyone should die before they become infected. So they go around killing people who are uninfected to help them avoid becoming infected, because that's worse than death.
Goodness.
There are factions like the Defenders who go around, and they're more the selfless protectors that you're talking about, but they'll protect as many towns and villages as they can. And there are small communities who have their own defenders within this world.
Wow. Interesting. So it's a 24-page comic. Do they, at this point, I guess, they probably have a fair idea of the stuff you're explaining. This is the world they live in, basically.
So they know about this, but most of it is not super necessary to the story in this case. So I'm not belaboring the point within the comic. It is worth saying that if you're really interested in the things I'm saying and you want to know more, the top two tiers, three tiers, give you the role-playing game. And actually, the very top tier gives you even a our audiobook, which is a series of stories based in this universe, which will explore the perspective from every group, every faction, and what it's like to live in this world as well.
Wow. Wow, so you've developed this pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, Iron Survival's been around for 7-8 years now.
Wow.
It's one of our more popular games, and this is our first comic in the universe, but it sort of surprises me to say that, if that makes sense. It feels like something we should have done ages ago.
Mm-hmm. So this is a 24-page comic. Is this the first comic? Does this lead into other stories? The thing that drives me crazy about individual issues is there's a cliffhanger at the end.
So there is something of a cliffhanger at the end of this, in a sense. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. If I was to fund and write a second issue, I don't believe I would follow up on that. It's more a teaser for what might happen in the future. So there are so many adventures for these three to have that I don't particularly need to follow up on it. It's more a, hey, you know what? This wasn't quite what you thought at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So although you might think it's a cliffhanger, it's kind of not. This is a self-contained story that absolutely we can go on and tell more stories, and I would love to. But mm-hmm. it's not a cliffhanger. This story comes to a close on its own. It's more that, I guess the way I would put it is more like, as someone who knows the story of Marvel Comics, right? You would read an issue of, or you'd read the whole of the Superhero Civil War. Mm-hmm. And you know that there's stuff that's fallout from that that's going to keep going for a long time, but mm-hmm. that story itself is over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When it ends, it's actually over, but you know there's fallout that's going to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Yes. Some people expect the universes to be completely self-contained, but those of us who live in the real world know that there are communities and groups that are beyond the ones that we contact, and then when we come in touch with them, it can change our whole perspective on things. So
yeah, the particular thing I'm thinking about is after the end of Civil War, if I remember right, mm-hmm. Thor ended up in a tussle with Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Quite mm-hmm. a serious one. But that was long mm-hmm. after the Civil War ended and Thor returned to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it is possible that there is another story to be told with these same characters and more. But right now, yeah, this story is self-contained. It ends. And then, as you say, there are people who are affected by the actions in this story who will move forward in their story.
Hmm. Wow. Now, the thing that's interesting to me, particularly about the Kickstarter, is that you have an extremely modest goal. That's right. Because when I see Kickstarters, there are some people who look for thousands and thousands of dollars. You're in American dollars, you're looking for $300.
That's right. You know me quite well by now, Wayne. I don't mm-hmm. write comics for the money.
Mm-hmm.
I write comics because I love telling stories. And mm-hmm. $300 will let me print this book and tell this story. And if mm-hmm. that's all I get, that's all I get. Mm-hmm. I would love to have more. I would love to be able to tell another story. But if I can't tell another story right away, then I will eventually. I'll be able to eventually. I just won't be able to immediately. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's okay. Mm-hmm. It's how much people want to see another story beyond the funded goal of, yeah, I need this to print the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you provide digital versions as well. Yeah. And that's a digital version is $5. Estimated deliveries in August.
I like to be pessimistic around my estimated delivery. I believe I can deliver it significantly sooner than that.
One
bit of lettering. I'm not quite fixed on all of the wording in the last couple of pages. I'd like to rework it again one more time after we finish the Kickstarter. just to make it perfect.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, I would rather wait for something to be done right than to be done on time.
Right. And actually, I even talk about that in the risks and challenges section below the Kickstarter. You know, my first duty as a Kickstarter creator is to deliver you something amazing. And then secondly, on time. And that will always be my priority order. And if you don't like it, please don't back my projects. Because if I need to delay it to make it perfect, I will.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the, like I said, I'd rather, and you're communicating with fans and stuff and letting people know when things are going to be available. As long as you let people know ahead of time, fans are pretty understanding when it comes to that kind of thing. So
I mean, I'm actually approaching 100 funded Kickstarters at this point.
Wow.
This will be number 98.
Wow.
If it funds.
Wow.
So I'd like to think that I've built up a bit of a reputation. I've been late on the deadline twice, one of which was a stretch goal that was late. Are stretch goals on the same deadline as the project? I don't even know. I'm not even sure. The other one was COVID-related delays. Unfortunately, our artist was hit by COVID and became unavailable. We had a significant delay, and one of my role-playing games was about a year late to be delivered. But I was in touch all the time with the fans. I was going, hey, guys, sorry, we're having problems. Obviously, COVID's a serious thing. We're having issues here, and we're doing our best. We're trying to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, as you say, was very understanding.
Yeah. It's, you know, the thing of it is communication is so vital when it comes to this. So it's, but you know, the pages that I see and the descriptions of the characters, of course, I'm sure people are asking, well, what makes your stuff different from The Walking Dead? You know, because I have to be honest with you, I'm done with The Walking Dead. I see new shows are coming on and stuff, but I read the conclusion in the comic. And so for me, I'm like, well, I know the end. Why would I keep watching that stuff? So I'm sure you have thought about this a lot to make sure that this has its own character. It has its own place. And
like I said earlier, the thing that really makes this differ from The Walking Dead is that thing we were talking about earlier about how it's 100 years ago, so you're not just salvaging all the stuff that's there. You are far more desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, in another 100 years, humanity will be dead. Most people are just out for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes this a very different world. There's no one out there trying to build a community that's going to survive against the zombies. At least no one who really expects to succeed. That might be slightly untrue. There's a faction called the Sisterhood of Pyrus who believe and they buy or beg or steal the locations of underground bunkers that are continuity of government bunkers from before the cataclysm.
Mm-hmm.
And they live underground and maintain those nuclear reactors. They'll probably still be alive in 100 years, but they're just about the only people who will be.
Unless the radiation gets them.
Unless the radiation gets them from the... But indeed, I hope that their radiation shielding is good. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So there's a lot to explore in this world, and there's a lot of things that you're doing different, I think, that makes it more vastly more interesting than... like I said, my Walking Dead days are pretty much over, but I'm still interested in post-apocalyptic stuff. If it's done well.
Yeah.
And I think your stuff is very well planned out. And I love something that people have thought out and made interesting, you know, specifically not to be something else. So I have to congratulate you on that. I think if anybody has any doubts, just, oh, I read The Walking Dead, so I got nothing. I've already seen that. I would have to say you haven't seen this. And that's something that I highly recommend get into because Ed Heron and the people he works with like to tell great stories that we haven't read before. So I highly encourage you to support it. Let me say again, this project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Sunday, March 24 at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Different in your time zone, I'm sure, and a very modest goal of $300. And you're looking at it right now as we're talking, and I hope by the time this posts, that you are past that and into stretch goals and all kinds of stuff, because this just sounds like a lot of interesting things going on, lots of fun. So I wish you much success with, like, do with all your other stuff. But before I let you go, what other projects are you working on? Is Shades of Vengeance working on that we should be aware of?
Well, there are a few things going on. First of all, before I answer that question, I just want to say thank you. That's really, I know that I respect your opinion on comics, and I know that everyone who listens to you does as well. And I'm really grateful for you looking at this comic. I believe I sent you some advanced pages, didn't I? And I'm really grateful for you looking over this comic and really being so excited about it, because I work hard on this stuff and it really means a lot to me. So thank you very much for your kind words. I really appreciate that.
No problem.
So what are we working on? Loads and loads of stuff, as always. First of all, we've got Era Kaiju, which is on Kickstarter right now when we're recording. But probably by the time this comes out, it'll only have a couple of hours left. That's a role-playing game, tabletop role-playing game, where you get to play as a kaiju. It's a lot of fun. We've got loads of stretch goals. If you hear this and you're interested in kaiju, strongly recommend you go check out Era Kaiju. It's on Kickstarter just when this comes out, but not much longer. It ends on the day this comes out, I believe. Secondly, we are about to launch an audio drama called Dark City, which is a noir audio drama. And it's got that noir theme. Excuse me, I'm sorry. It's got that noir theme, but it's really all about conspiracies. And it's a hard-boiled detective who is going and trying to find the Sherlock Holmes of that world, just a genius who vanished. And she's been hired by this guy's daughter to go find him. And she has ambitions of her own. She wants to be the next Jack Bennett. And the cast that I got involved with this are just brilliant. Erin Lundquist, Masako X, Ryan Negron. They're all brilliant. And it's a really good story. We're about to launch that on Kickstarter very, very soon. A really great bunch to work with. But comic-wise, what we've got coming, you might recall a while ago, I believe I spoke to you about it at the time, I made a role-playing game that was based in a Final Fantasy-inspired universe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been working on a 10-page comic in that universe. And I've struggled to find the right artist. And unfortunately, I think my latest artist has also let me down, I'm sad to say. But I have a strong desire to tell this story. It's not part of the story of that world. It's based afterwards. It picks up some of the same characters who survived. And it's inspired by Final Fantasy VII, XIII, a little bit of X in there. And there's the whole world, which is inspired by the whole range of Final Fantasy games, which I've played for years. And I'm really excited to bring this comic to life because it's a bit more of a different kind of story that you don't see very often. Again, it does happen to have a strong female lead. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. And then finally, I am working on Cascade Part 2. Now, I'm very sure that we spoke about Cascade Part 1 when it came out a couple of years back.
Mm-hmm.
And annoyingly, that project kind of got a bit hurt by COVID, by various other things going on. And I've really struggled to pick it up. The artist went missing for a while. And unfortunately, he's come back. He's absolutely fine. I got very worried about him for a while there. But he's fine. Unfortunately, he's not available to work on the comic, so I've had to find a new artist to work on Cascade Part 2 and 3. But we are now 6 pages in. I'm very optimistic about how this is going to look and feel. And I'm really looking forward to finishing that story soon, because it's been written for a long time. And then moving on to the third Violet comic. And you know I love writing Violet. She's my favorite character to write. The third, fourth, and fifth Violet comics will be a three-issue arc that I've been working out with Jennifer for years now, my co-writer on Violet. So I'm kind of... I've got lots of things I want to do, but I've been struggling a bit more than in previous years with comic artists and their reliability, which is a bit sad. I'm struggling a little bit with that. I'm hoping that I'll be able to turn this around soon.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but we're in an economy that makes it a little tough.
Yeah.
To definitely. Work on these kinds of things because they're not, you know, it's not paying the bills. It's not paying your rent and stuff like that. And so these kinds of things tend to fall off the radar a little bit during this time. And hopefully that'll turn around soon. But reality gets in the way of comics. So
it can
sometimes
do.
You got to.
It can do. And it is a shame when that happens. But yeah, I'm not blaming anyone who can't support our comics right now. I totally understand. And you know what? I'd like to say to all your listeners, all the listeners right now, guys, if you can't afford it, like I know it's only $5 and it feels like, oh yeah, I'm saying you should spend $5. If you can't afford it, if you are struggling with your bills, do your bills, okay? Live your life, because if you're not going to live your life, you're definitely not going to enjoy comics.
Right, right. So many people I've had to say, did you, I'm looking for a new place to live. I said, why? Well, I couldn't pay my bills. Oh, pay the bills first, then worry about the comics.
Please.
Unfortunately,
your, that's your life is very important. To me as a comic creator, it's far more important to me that you are okay than you are reading my comic.
So if we want to keep up with what you're doing, what's the website we should go to?
So shadesofvengeance.com, although now we're actually subset into three separate websites. There's sovcomics.com, era-games.com, and erascapes with no dash.com.
Okay, and social media?
Social media. You can find us on Instagram at Shades of Vengeance or sovcomics. You can find us on Facebook at Shades of Vengeance, on TikTok at SOV Comics. You can find us on Twitter at Shades_of_Venge, because Twitter has one less character for your name, which is just annoying. you can find us on Discord. The link's on the website. Unfortunately, I don't have a convenient link for that. It's on the website. It's a bunch of letters and numbers, and most Discord communities are. Everyone is welcome in our community. And if you're a listener out there and you like comics and you think you might like to enjoy some role-playing games, come and join us on Discord, because we run role-playing games on our Discord community, and everyone is welcome. You don't have to own our games already. You don't have to pay anything to play. You are invited to come and join us and have a good time and enjoy yourself. And if you like the books, then buy them. And if you like the game, then buy the books. And if you don't like the game, that's fine. Or if you like the game, you can't afford the books, deal with your bills and buy the books later.
Sage advice there, Ed. But when you can, be sure to get to the SOV comics, because wonderful stuff, great reading, something I haven't read. And in my experience, that's something I always cherish. So, Ed, just much success. One last time, it's Grace Under Pressure, and it's on Kickstarter, and it will be funded if it reaches its goal by Sunday, March 24 at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, which is where I am, which is why it's saying that.
Yes, but, 9 p.m. GMT for anyone who is interested.
Okay, and so much success, Ed, and I just can't wait to see what you guys are going to do next. Great stuff. Just looks so much fun to read, so keep it up.
Thank you so much, and thank you again, Wayne, for having us back.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.